Welcome to this year's broadcast clinic. It's my pleasure to introduce Nicole Starrett from Dielectric. I think it's time to talk about some actual RF. She's here to discuss a new FM antenna design, parts of which will look very familiar to our TV colleagues. Please welcome Nicole to broadcast clinic.
Hello, everyone. This is an interesting setup, but I'm going to get used to it. My name is Nicole Starrett. I work for Dielectric, and my presentation is going to be a little bit different today than what we've heard so far. I'm here to present changing the landscape of FM broadcast antenna technology. There we go. All right, so what am I going to be discussing? I'm going to talk about a new antenna design at Dielectric, which introduces pylon technology to FM broadcasting. And this was originally presented back at NAB this spring. We've learned a lot since then. So I also have a few slides on what we've learned and what we've improved. I'm also going to discuss the FCC ruling on the use of simulation for FM directional pattern studies, where that started back in June of 2021, where it is now, and how we've developed a new artificial intelligence approach for pattern optimization. I always like to start with a history lesson. So as many of you know, or might know, it's been many years since any real game-changing technology has been introduced into the FM market. This dates back to 1967, where we have the BFC presented by Matty Sokola, which is now our DCRC at Dielectric. And in 1978, you have Don Hymas presenting the BFM, which has turned into our quadrupole DCRM. You also have the rototiller, which was patented around the same time. All of these choices are still very popular in today's market. There we go. All right, so we just talked about rings and tillers. We also have stub loops and panel antennas available, all great options. But this selection is limited to individual elements with complex features and a complex feed system. So there's always something to think about. And at Dielectric, we started wondering, what can we do to introduce pylon technology to FM antennas? Oh, this is my video.
Now, Dielectric is about to write a new chapter in FM radio's history of innovation. Antennas made with the pylon concept, fabricated as a cylinder, have been used with great success in the television industry, but only in the television industry. Dielectric engineers have now been able to apply the advantages of the pylon design to FM radio. The result is the new FM pylon antenna. The FM pylon antenna improves bandwidth without lowering the quality factor, which not only benefits your radio station, but your radio listeners. Dielectric has brought the principles we've been using in television antennas for decades to FM radio with the FM pylon antenna.
There we go. That's just our little marketing video that kind of covers everything, and I'm going to touch on each of the things it mentioned in a little more detail. This is one of my favorite old pylon antenna ads. We have a printed version on the wall in our offices, and it's just fantastic. So, what is a pylon antenna? Pylon antennas was originally coined by RCA. They are top-mounted, long, thin steel poles that are slotted coaxial antennas. They're much smaller in size and less wind load than other broadcast antennas, such as panels. And one of the big benefits is their simplicity. They have very few parts compared to like a panel antenna, which means they're highly reliable. The vast majority of UHF and more recently VHF antennas are slotted coaxial pylon designs. However, as great as pylons are, they do have a disadvantage, and this is their inherently narrow bandwidth. For most applications, usage is only considered for single-channel operation. We do have dual channels and tri-channels out there, but they're not the norm for pylons. The natural bandwidth is typically about 1% as defined by that beautiful little equation on the slide at UHF for a VSWR less than 1.1 to 1. so typically a single channel. If you look at a typical 100 megahertz span plot of a UHF antenna, you can see on the Smith chart, it's pretty spread out. But if you zoom in, the only thing that's under the 1.1 is that little red trace, which is channel 36 in this case. So you're really only looking at single channel operation. So we had to think about, if we want to apply this technology to the FM band, how do we increase that bandwidth? There are two general techniques to increase bandwidth. The first is lowering the Q of the antenna, and the second is adding external phase cancellation in the feed system. I'm going to focus on lowering the Q. The FM pylon basic building block is a four-bay single section. You can see a representation of it on the right hand of the slide there. And the expected bandwidth within an allowable VSWR spec is given by this beautiful equation on the slide. Now, the equation itself doesn't matter too much, but what it boils down to is that Q and bandwidth are inversely proportional. So in order to increase bandwidth, you need to decrease Q. The standard Q of a pylon antenna is around 30 to 40 in most cases. Some are a little better or worse, but that's typically where it falls. For the FM band, we need about 19% bandwidth. So based on that equation, you now need a Q of 5 to 10 for your max VSWR of 1.2 for the FM band. Come on, there we go. So how do we actually reduce that Q? If you look at the Q of a parallel resonant circuit, shown on the slide here, you can see that Q is directly proportional to the capacitance of that circuit, or in this case, of the antenna. If you look at coax versus microstrip, I'm not going to go through the math, but you have your beautiful equations on the right there. What it boils down to is for the same Z0, the capacitance of your microstrip works out to be about half the capacitance of an equivalent coax. So the capacitance of the slot network can be greatly reduced by changing from coaxial to microstrip. With that relation between the two, you can see that using microstrip-fed slots cuts the Q in half, which effectively doubles your operating bandwidth. Another technique to reduce Q and increase bandwidth relates to Babinet's principle. I think it's originally from optics, but H.G. Booker in 1946 related it to antenna theory, and it's been pretty useful. What this boils down to is a slot is a complementary dual of a dipole. So if you put them both in the same circuit, you get an inverse response, which then lowers the Q of your circuit or your antenna. We've done extensive testing on this, and it has shown that the Q is approximately cut in half, which doubles the operating bandwidth again. This technique, lucky for us, also provides circular polarization for an antenna. So the parasitic dipole couples the horizontally polarized radiation that's coming out of your slot and re-radiates it into the vertical plane. So we took a single section of our FM pylon antenna when it was originally developed. I think this was back in the early spring. And we tested it on our 25-foot antenna trestle. And our testing confirmed that using the Q-reducing techniques that I've discussed here has allowed the VSWR performance for less than 1.2 to 1 for the entire FM band. And this is on a single four-bay section. You can see the plots on the right there. However, it's not just all about bandwidth. You're also looking at your polarization across the FM band. If we start out with our standard floating tilted dipole as shown on the screen, we have limited bandwidth, which we've discussed, and it also has an unstable HV ratio across the band, so you're not going to have the same amount of V-pole from 88 to 108. And this is unacceptable for full band operation, because if you're a station at 88 and you want to have about the same amount of V-pole that the other stations on the antenna may have. So we need to expand on this simple dipole concept. And what we did here, we went through a ton of different geometries, and what we've settled on is this dual parasitic floating dipole. This dipole applies log periodic principles to the antenna in that each dipole resonates a different part of the band. And this has been able to stabilize the HV ratio from 88 to 108, as you can see on the slide. And this variation across the band is comparable to today's broadband single element designs. And then we have a comparison of the previous to where we are now. However, as many of you may know, with any engineering project, you take two steps forward and one step back. When we added this dual dipole to the design, it compromised the antenna's bandwidth, so because you're no longer getting the benefits of Babinet's principle that we discussed before. So you can see on the plot there, the red is where we were at before with our testing. We have our nice, beautiful VSWR, and then we add those two dipoles on it, and oh, well, look at that. The VSWR is no longer under a 1.25 or a 1.2. We're still exploring options to improve this bandwidth. We've made some strides. We're still tweaking it, as all R&D projects, you know, you're always tweaking. So things that we're adding in are changing the internal components of the antenna to increase a single bay bandwidth. We're also adding in phase cancellation between bays and azimuth phase rotation. What about manufacturability of this thing? I know you start out a project and you have this kind of idea in your head of what it's going to look like. And we said, okay, we're gonna have a nice round extrusion. It's going to be beautiful. Looks a little bit like a canoe. Great. And then we took it to vendors and they said, we can't make that. So since then, we have gone through a few iterations and we've transitioned to a folded box design, which increases the economic manufacturability of this antenna. And as time goes on, we're continuing to explore ways to simplify that design. Let's talk about pattern congruency. The FN pylon's free space pattern, obviously, is not omni. It's more of a B pattern, and you have your directional V pole. So your H pole and your V pole are not congruent. Is this really a problem? You could probably argue that, but if you look at a ring style antenna in free space, yes, the patterns are nicely congruent. They're beautiful, obviously way better than the FM pylon, right? But free space is not the real world. We have to look at feed lines, we have to look at towers, we have to look at other things in the aperture. So when you throw a feed line on there, which you have to feed the antenna, you start to approach some of that directionality that you see in the FM pylons. They're really not all that different. Same thing, if you put it on a tower, you're getting a similar effect on the pattern from the FM pylon to a ring-style antenna. So yes, ring styles are omni, perfectly omni-beautiful, but in the real world, are they? Let's talk about pattern flexibility. So there are many more pattern options than a single bay or a B pattern. You can use a single bay as a like an antenna, an array element in a circular configuration. This provides the same pattern flexibility as a more complicated panel antenna. These patterns are created by the number of bays around and adjusting the amplitude and phase to each face. And these configurations can also be top or side mounted. So there's a lot of flexibility there. You've got, on the right there, you can see you've got you know, your omnis, your peanut patterns, your cardioids, your skulls. And you also have, by changing the, especially the amplitude and phase to each face, you can adjust for certain FCC protects. You also have elevation pattern flexibility. So the gain, beam tilt, and null fill can all be varied. You stack multiple sections together, you change the phase and amplitude between them, fed with an external feed line and a power divider, and you get your different elevation patterns. The best thing about this antenna and pylons in general is we all know simplicity equals reliability. Pylon antennas have always been known for their simplicity. The FM pylon's no different. This equation on this slide comes down to your failure rate is directly proportional to the number of parts in your antenna. The FM pylon itself has 60% less parts than an equivalent ring style antenna and 90% less parts than an equivalent panel. Less parts, less connections, more simple, more reliable. So this inherently makes the FM pylon more reliable than other equivalent antennas. A little bit about voltage handling for this antenna. voltage safety factor for an antenna under combined multi-station operation is on this really long equation here. Through testing, we've determined that the recommended voltage safety factor is typically 5 to 1. We've done extensive high pot testing on these modules, and assuming a 5 to 1 voltage safety factor, and each station is running at negative 14 dB IBOC, the FM pylon is not voltage limited until 7 stations are combined into the unit. So if you're looking for that, like a top-mounted master FM application, you've got 4 sections around, and this will accommodate 6 stations, each at 20 kilowatts at those guidelines, the 5 to 1 safety factor and the negative 14 IBOC. The last piece is mechanical wind load comparison. These comparisons were all done doing under G-code. And we have a 4-bay FM pylon versus an 8-bay half-wave spaced ring-style antenna. And the eight bays are required on the ring to get the same bandwidth that's available with the FM pylon. The pylon, technically, has a little bit more wind load, but it's pretty comparable, 18% more. But when you add radomes to that ring-style antenna, you now have 22% less wind load for an FM pylon with radomes. When you compare it to a panel antenna, this one's a 3-around CBR, the pylon has less wind load than a standard antenna by about 20%. And when you add ice, that increases to 50%. So that's all about the FM pylon. The last bit I have to talk to you about is our artificial intelligence approach to FM pattern optimization. A little bit about the FCC ruling. In June of 2021, we filed a PRM with the FCC, which would allow the use of computer simulation to verify antenna patterns for directional pattern studies. In November of 2021, there was a unanimous decision by the FCC to move forward with the NPRM. We had strong support from the FCC. The public comment period was reduced to only 30 days at that time, although there was a 2-week extension granted due to the Christmas and New Year holiday. Once the public comments came in, the results were strongly in favor, with 18 in favor and 1 opposed. The NPRM passed a final vote on May 19th of this year, and it was filed with the Register the following day. We're currently waiting for the Office of Management and Budget to approve everything, and we expect that later this month. It's an extra bureaucratic step within the FCC. So what is the process for actually getting this FCC validation and acceptance? You have to look at each antenna model series individually and verify them by submitting both simulated measurements and range measurements for that particular antenna model. Then you have to show reasonable correlation between the two measurements. Now, the FCC has not defined what reasonable correlation means, so we kind of took it upon ourselves to create a mathematical calculation called correlation coefficient. Unfortunately, I didn't put the equation on the slide because I know all of y'all love math. But based on that equation, it basically compares the azimuth patterns around in every direction and gives you a percentage of how close they are to each other. And what we look for it to be reasonable correlation, is greater than 95%. Once a bay is verified using a particular simulation software, and again, it has to be a particular bay with a particular software, the FCC will permit all subsequent directional FM pattern studies using that bay and that software to be completed by simulation, which is fantastic. Once it's done, it's done. You can just use computer simulation from there on out. You do, however, have to cross-reference the original submission. So why would we want to do simulation in place of range measurements? I mean, range measurements have been the standard for years. Well, the original petition to the FCC was based on the many benefits of simulation over range measurements. And these are, most of them are listed here. You can probably think of some others as well. But there's a cost advantage. Once you're invested in the software, it's very cheap to run patterns in simulation versus setting the bays up on the range, taking all that time. Simulation also provides a reflection-free environment, which no matter how good your range is, it's never going to be reflection-free. It eliminates your mechanical tolerancing from actually building the things to put on the range. And it says human error on this slide. It doesn't eliminate all human error, because that's impossible. But it does eliminate measuring something wrong, putting the wrong bay on the tower, having the wrong tower set up, all of those things. Simulation also allows for complete optimization of an antenna on a tower. You're not limited to whatever the technician or engineer comes up with as a solution. You have infinite possibilities. Because they run faster and you're not spending a lot of time setting up, you also eliminate a lot of time constraints. And simulation provides standardization, higher quality, and reproducibility because you're looking at the same thing every time in the same type of simulation. So this is the basic process. You start by choosing a model from your library. You have a certain antenna bay. You slap some parasitics on it, put it on the correct tower, set it up. You run a starting pattern, compare it to your FCC protect. Okay, looks good, doesn't look good, what do we got to move? Move the bay around the tower, get a good starting location, and then you add your parasitics and other things in the aperture. You then will check for FCC compliance, take it to your customer and say, okay, this is FCC compliant, but they might say, no, I want more in this direction, I want more in this direction, so you go back and forth a little bit. The great thing about this process is we can replace almost all of that with artificial intelligence. So what is this AI optimizer that I've been talking about? This process is modeled after how bees swarm and converge on a common location in nature, which is particle swarm optimization theory. It's basically intelligent decisions are made outside of the simulation software by another software product that then help the simulation converge on a specific solution. So it's the same process. You start by selecting your model, setting up your constraints, setting up your mechanical constraints and what you want it to look like. Then the HFSS software, which is an ANSYS product, that's what we use, solves it, gives OptiSlang, which is the optimizer software that we use, the feedback, then makes intelligence decisions, sends it back into HFSS, and this process continues until you have a pattern that you like. The great thing about going to AIO is lead time improvement for these studies. If you look at traditional range measurements, at Dielectric we've always used a 4.4 to 1 scale model range. I know some people use a full scale. You have several hours in setup time, maybe a good average is 4. You can spin a pattern every 20 minutes depending on how fast your range is. So if you give yourself a week of range time, or 5 days of lead time, you can get about 120 iterations in 80 hours or so, maybe less, maybe a little more. Going to AIO, you have a 1 hour, plus or minus, sometimes it's only about 20 minutes, depending on your antenna, setup time. You then have a 20 to 30 hour cycle time where HFSS and OptiSlang do their thing, and you can completely ignore it. Which in that time, it'll run 300 to 400 iterations. So your total lead time here is about 2 days, and you really only have that 1 hour of setup time. Here's a great example of this process. This example is a C-bay antenna on a 6.5-foot face tower. And I will say the patterns on the slides, the H-pole is shown in blue, your V-pole is shown in red, your FCC protect is in green, and your composite is in brown. For this example, OptiSlang went through 310 pattern iterations. The first 100 iterations or so were very erratic. Basically, the geometry variables are spread out, so your bees, in this example, are looking for their direction. They're looking for where they should be swarming. By the time you get to the last 50 iterations or so, you have much smaller design changes. So those variables are clustering around your solution. Your bees are now swarming in that area. And this optimization was completed in 21 hours. So there's the little GIF on the slide that goes through a lot of the steps, and then you have the before and after pictures up there of your starting and final patterns. So, time for conclusions. To summarize, the FM pylon broadcast antenna is unique. It's a new technology that we haven't seen in the FM industry for a while. It utilizes all of the advantages of pylon technology that we've been using in UHF and VHF for years, which low wind load, simplicity, less parts, more reliable, and your azimuth and elevation flexibility. It's broadband currently, and we're working toward full band operation. As with all R&D projects, there's always more room to improve. And it's a cost-effective, simple alternative to FM element arrays, as well as complicated panel antennas. I've also gone through how we've prepared for the FCC ruling to allow simulation for FM directional pattern studies. And that covers the use of AIO, which will automate the simulation process. Adding this new level of optimization will increase the efficiency and accuracy of these studies. And as a side note, it wasn't included on these slides because I submitted them a few weeks ago, but we did just submit our first verification application to the FCC for one of our bays, so we're looking forward to that being approved very soon. Now I will take any questions you may have. Sure.
What was the length of one of those four element antennas?
Oh, you had to ask that. There was a time when I knew that off the top of my head. I want to say they're about 40 feet long.
40?
Yep. Yeah.
I saw the presentation you gave in April in Vegas, mm-hmm. and both of these have been very interesting. And I am curious to know what improvements you may have picked up over this first several months on the pylon.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think some of them were mentioned on the slides, but the major improvement has been figuring out how to manufacture it without it costing $1 million. That's been an adventure. But also introducing that double dipole that I talked about, we did not anticipate the effect or as much of an effect on the bandwidth, so reconfiguring that to have a better bandwidth has been most of our focus.
Yeah, part B on that
sure.
is it's looks like you're doing a good job on circularizing the horizontal. Presumably mm-hmm. you're going to have to continue to work on getting the vertical polarity more closer to circular.
Yes. Yeah, that is something we're continuing to work on. As we narrow in on a final design for this type of antenna, we are also exploring pattern flexibility and how to make the H-pole and V-pole more congruent. Yes.
Has there been any progress made on the possibility of using the pylon structure as a part of a directional antenna system for FM?
Yes. So I had a slide a few back that had all the different azimuth patterns on it. You can use a 4-around configuration or even a 3-around configuration and adjust the phasing and amplitude between the bays in that configuration to have quite a bit of flexibility in your azimuth pattern to make directional patterns.
So I don't know if it's possible you could back up a little bit on
sure.
Where you showed the patterns compared to like a traditional kind of side-mounted.
Oh, yep. Hang on just a second. And get back through.
Yeah.
These ones, yes.
Maybe forward one more. No, actually back a couple more. I have, so
this
right
one.
Here. Yeah,
okay.
So when you're talking about, you know, comparing these, and of course you're saying the feed line is being added. So is that FM, the FM pylon free space that is the first one, does that include the feed line on that one? Is that the pickup pattern with the feed line?
Yes, so that's a great question. So it's not technically modeled in this free space pattern. However, with that B pattern, your feed is on the back side, and we have tested it with the feed line on there, and it's not visible at FM.
So the second part is this, obviously those other ones are either mounted on the side of the tower or on the side of some sort mm-hmm. of structure where the pylon, is that for the pylon at the top of the tower? Is that the pylon mounted on the side of the tower, and have you taken into
You're talking about these patterns? or?
No, I'm
this
talking,
one. Okay,
like
so
that first one, yeah.
I understand. So this FM pylon is in free space, so it'd be like on the top of a tower, not
okay,
on a tower.
That is at the very top versus, do you have any instances of what it would look like mounted on the side?
Yep, so that's
what that is.
That's what this is, yep.
Okay.
Hi, I'm curious about the computing resources required to run those simulations for the optimizations.
Sure.
Are you doing this on a standard laptop, or do you guys have clusters of computers doing that?
Sure. We can use clusters of computers. We try not to because we only have so many licenses, and we try not to use up bandwidth when we have 7 or 8 users all using this software. You can use it like that. You can run it on a laptop also. It'll just be really slow. So I have... what's sitting on my desktop? I think it's like a 20-core server that I run most of these on. And we also have another 24-core server that we use for a lot of the pattern optimization. Sure. All right, well, if anybody has any other questions for me, feel free to catch me during the break. Thank you.